it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale frequently.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belleville.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Glad to have you here for Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. Our phone lines are open at 971-533-7111. I think they're open. My Skype crapped out on me on my interview, and it says to update my Skype credit. But when I update my Skype credit, it's not updating. It's, I don't know what the hell's going on. And I hate it when these things happen because, you know, I'm 4 dozen years old now. So I'm increasingly worried about appearing to be the old, out-of-touch guy who can't handle technology. You know, I used to be an IT whiz, you know, back in the dark ages, just 10 years ago. I don't know about now. But I don't know if the phone line's open or not. That's all I'm saying. I'll try it during the break. Let's see what happens. I'll call myself and see what happens. We got a lot to talk about on today's show. And I got to warn you. I am going to talk about guns again. Not right now. Don't turn off yet. Don't turn off yet. I've got some weed stories. I've got some weed stories. But I had an epiphany about guns today that I have to talk about, and I'll get to that in a later segment. So we can talk about weed first. And what we'll talk about weed first is Arizona, where things are getting pretty fucked up in Arizona. So Arizona's got what most states have these days, and that is a well-funded, professional, organized, poll-tested, nationally backed, competent marijuana legalization effort. And then you got the other guys. So this is a situation that has brewed up in California, of course, when it was the Jack Herer Initiative or the MCLR versus the Adult Use of Marijuana Act. And, of course, the funded, nationally backed, competent, professional, et cetera, is the one that's still around and will make the ballot. There's a similar thing in Massachusetts. There was, there was the MPP version, and then there was the Bay State repeal. And to be fair, a lot of good, you know, professional folks in Bay State repeal, but not funded, not nationally backed. Maine is the one that turned out interesting. There was a grassroots group called Regulate Maine and then MPP as well. And they actually took the Regulate Maine language because the Regulate Maine people were actually doing a decent job of gathering signatures. So, you know, I'm not trying to completely disparage the grassroots movements, you know, to try to legalize. Hell, Michigan did a damn fine job aside from getting screwed on the 180-day rule. But the general point I'm making here is, what we're seeing in state after state after state is more than one effort to legalize marijuana. And it usually breaks down to MPP's effort versus the grassroots effort. Now, I like the grassroots efforts. The grassroots efforts generally are much more liberal in their construction. More possession, more rights. They're generally much better initiatives. They're generally the initiatives I would like to see. But
they don't make the ballot. And I wish they would, but they don't. So then you got the MPP initiative, or the Adult Use of Marijuana Act in California, that will make the ballot. And then you get the people from the initiative that didn't make the ballot fighting against the initiative that did make the ballot. And that I have a severe problem with. That is seriously wrong. We're going to talk about this coming up in Arizona, how the Arizonans for Mindful Regulation, who didn't get their initiative on the ballot, are trying to defeat the MPP initiative in Arizona to legalize marijuana. I'm Radical Russ. We're back in just 2 minutes. Stick around.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Maui Wowie. Acapulco Gold. California Kush. Our strains stretch everywhere, too.
This is the Cannabis Radio Network.
Great websites today need expert web design and development and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolute, Carlsberg, and Nestea trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com. Doc Rob, the concierge for better living.
Cannabis is just one of the many great plants that we have on this planet called Earth that we can use consciously and intelligently to improve our well-being.
Take a real, raw, inside look at healthier living while sharing great ideas and improvements for a better quality of life.
Learning to live and live well is a lifelong process. This is a journey. You could be 80 years old or 8 years old. You can still learn something that's going to make tomorrow a little bit healthier, a little bit easier, a little bit happier, a little bit better.
The Concierge for Better Living with Doc Rob. Only on CannabisRadio.com.
Get the latest updates on the Russ Belville Show by following Radical Russ on Twitter and liking the Russ Belville Show on Facebook.
With over 6 years of experience in the industry, New Era CPAs is one of the nation's leading cannabis accounting firms, helping hundreds of growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies with their tax, legal, and business strategies. New Era CPAs offices cover the West Coast from Seattle to San Diego, and their skilled team is always available to help you take your business to the next level. Visit NewEraCPAs.com for more info and set up a consultation. Welcome to the New Era.
And blue blashing gurgan, fuffin' der blashing schnurb norbin. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Just about 9 after the hour, and we're talking about this unfortunate situation where the supporters of true legalization fail to get their initiative on the ballot. And so since they can't have true legalization, they want to fight against the legalization that does make the ballot. Now, I understand supporting one initiative over the other, like you like this one better than the other one, and fighting for your initiative. And I can understand even not liking an initiative and not voting for it, right? Just skipping it on the ballot. I could see that for a moral stance. Like, I know a lot of people with I-502 in Washington just could not say yes to a per se DUID, regardless of the rest of it. So they just abstained from voting on it. But to actively vote against a legalization proposal, to put yourself on the same side as the people that want to lock me up in a cage is just unacceptable. In Arizona, the situation is Arizonans for Mindful Regulation and a fellow by the name of Jason Medar, who's their leader, who now head up the Stoners Against Legalization
in Arizona. They didn't get enough signatures. They got like 120,000 or so signatures. They didn't get enough this year. Of course, they're still gathering signatures till July 7th, but they didn't get enough signatures this year. So they say, well, by gum, next time, 2018, by gum, we'll have it. We'll have enough signatures in 2018. Well, that's great. That's fantastic. It always amuses me how people who think they can get their thing on the ballot the next year don't seem to think they could fix the problems with a bad initiative if it passed. It's just interesting to me. But anyway, he promises, oh, 2018, we'll make it in 2018, abs. Oh, sure. You know, when it's a non-presidential election year, when it's what's looking to be now, if Hillary Clinton wins this thing and we have a Democratic president, what tends to happen in the midterm that follows is you get a kind of a Republican sweep. So, yeah, in 2018, when all the Republicans are coming out to repudiate President Hillary, that's when you're going to pass legalization in Arizona. But that's fine. I can accept that if that's all they're doing. Hey, we didn't make it this year. We're going to try again in 2018. But to actively work against the MPP initiative is traitorous. It's traitorous to the rest of us as cannabis consumers. Currently in the state of Arizona, any amount of marijuana can be charged as a felony. That's not always, but any amount. Like, there's no guidance as to, like, under this, whew, at least it's just a misdemeanor. No, it's like any... It's up to the whim of the prosecutor. And we're talking about people like Sheila Polk and Bill Montgomery, these reefer-mad anti-cannabis prohibitionist zealots, right, running these counties. And people like Sheriff Joe Arpaio, right? So, you know, not doing something in Arizona means something, right? So one of the things they disagreed with, because they originally, these groups all started out together and they were going to work on one thing, but they had a falling out. One of the things they had a falling out over is that under the CRIMLA, the MPP initiative, there would be felony possession over 2.5 ounces. It would legalize an ounce. Ounce to 2.5 would be a misdemeanor. And anything over 2.5 would be a felony. Remember, right now, anything is a felony. Any amount's a felony right now. The MPP one would at least give us a ceiling. Would say over 2.5, that's where the felonies are. Stay under that, you're fine. As far as misdemeanor or legal under an ounce. Well, no, that wasn't good enough for Jason Medar. Oh, my God, no. Theirs proposes up to 8 ounces in misdemeanor over a half pound. That's a felony. So, really, you want to blow this all up over the gap between 2.5 and 8 ounces being a felony. That's the problem here is that over 2.5, between 2.5 and 8 ounces would be a felony. You should think it should be over 8 ounces. That's the problem. The ceiling for felonies is too low at 2.5 ounces. But at least that is a policy difference that's rooted in some concern for the marijuana consumer. Yeah, we're talking about people that got more than 2.5 ounces on them at a time. But yeah, you can at least say, well, that's, you know, for the good of the consumer. What I believe the real split is over, though, is money, 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 money. Just what it always is over is money, 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 money. According to this article in Tucson.com, they say at least part of what caused the split was the insistence of the campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol to limit the number of places where people could buy marijuana initially to about 160. So MPP is going to limit the number of pot shops to about 160 in the state of Arizona. Out of that, the existing medical marijuana dispensaries have priority on the licensing. The current 80 medical marijuana dispensaries that exist in Arizona now would have the first crack at the 160 licenses. And Medar's all upset about that. And, you know, there should be more places to buy and there should be, you know, hundreds and hundreds of stores to buy marijuana. And so, okay, so what we're all upset about now here is business parts of this, right? Not enough people are making enough money. We're going to keep marijuana a felony for at least 2 more years in Arizona because we've got a disagreement over just how many people are going to be allowed to make money. Now, giving the medical dispensaries first shot at the recreational licenses is controversial. Some people argue that by doing so, you've rewarded the medical marijuana people for pioneering the industry, for setting up the situation that even where the thought of legalizing marijuana is even possible. And these people have experience in the distribution of marijuana to customers. Perhaps that would be some good institutional knowledge to add to our systems. And there's only 80 of them. There's 160 licenses. So they get half and newbies get half. That seems like a pretty reasonable compromise. It blows my mind because these people want perfect marijuana legalization right out of the gate. Meadar says, only the existing medical marijuana dispensaries are guaranteed to receive any of the recreational marijuana business licenses, with everyone else out of luck. Where does this guy learn math? 160 minus 80 leaves 80. 80 people who could be in luck. And the measure limits future competition until 2021, when the state agency could say whether or not there needs to be more licenses. Now, look, I don't agree with the capping of licenses or statewide canopy space. I think one of the lessons we can learn from Mark A.R. Kleiman and Botec is that you cannot come up with any reasonable limit on the number of licenses or the canopy space that is going to truly reflect what the market demands. I agree with Meadar if his point is this should be free market. However many pot shops there's going to be, let people open pot shops. And if there's enough, there's enough. If not, more people open pot shops. If there's too many, the ones that aren't good pot shops will close down, just like the market deals with everything else. That's a point to be made. But not at the expense of continuing to allow people to be arrested and prosecuted and have felony records when it doesn't have to be that way. Let's get it legal in the state of Arizona, and then let's craft the business regulations and fix what needs to be fixed. I think sometimes these people, these stoners against legalization, have no real concept of what a dramatic sea change it is to legalize even just an ounce and six plants. How that completely changes everything. You want to make Sheila Polk and Bill Montgomery just cry like little babies, pass marijuana legalization. Take away from these corrupt law enforcement bastards the ability to say, well, I smell weed, and put you in pink underwear in Sheriff Joe's overnight hostel. It just blows me away that for so long, being in the marijuana culture for so long has always been a dream of maybe someday we'll legalize pot, man. It'll be legal. You could have pot on you. The cops can't mess with you or harass you or shake you down. And that's coming. That's on the precipice. It's at the doorstep. And stoners would reject that. Say, oh, no, I'd rather let the cops keep fucking with me. You know, there's not going to be enough pot shops and people to make money on pot shops. And, you know, it's better that I continue to go pick up my weed in clandestine meetings in the Walgreens parking lot and get felonies if I'm caught. That would be better. You have no idea how much legalizing marijuana changes the whole world, changes the rhetoric of your state politicians, changes the ability of your law enforcement personnel and your courts to deal with you at any level that decrim and medical doesn't give you. Legal marijuana means marijuana is no longer contraband. It means the sight or smell of it or evidence of its production is no longer an excuse for cops to mess with your day. Why is this so hard for people to get? Yeah, it's not the perfect legalization. None of them are perfect yet, and none of them ever will be perfect legalizations. But they're all a lot better than the imperfect prohibition that we're suffering under right this minute.
That sucks. I hate.
Yeah.
Beavis and Butthead. They're working on the Trump campaign, aren't they? You don't know that. Beavis and Butthead both grew up, became political consultants, and now they're working for the Trump campaign. I think that explains a lot, actually. Hey, it's 420 here in the Pacific time zone, high atop the Ardea skyscraper in beautiful Lego Potland, Oregon. We'll take a break and be right back.
How high do you like your profit margin? CannabisRadio.com.
The next generation of vaporizers has arrived. Voober vaporizers are blazing the way with unparalleled technology for oil, concentrate, or dry flower pens. Providing unsurpassed customer service and expert craftsmanship, Voober vaporizers use cutting-edge technology, providing a power-packed, smoother vapor with a lifetime guarantee. Experience vaporizing the way it was meant to be, the Voober way.
This is Cannabis Facts from Robert Platshorn's thesilvertour.org. Supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. In 1937, the second most prescribed medicine, marijuana, was banned. It wasn't about marijuana. The paper, oil, and chemical industries lobbied to end hemp farming. No longer labor-intensive, an acre of hemp produced more quality paper than 4 acres of trees. Plastics and fibers could be produced from a plant. Hemp can even produce 10 times the energy of today's ethanol. As marijuana prohibition ends, many states now allow farmers to again grow hemp. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to process America's hemp crop at hempinc.com.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Remember, friends, there's more to life than marijuana. I just can't remember what it is. Why'd I come in here?
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, so we got an update here on the Eugene Monroe story. As we noted in the news, the offensive tackle for the Baltimore Ravens was unloaded today by the team. Monroe has been a vocal advocate for medical marijuana research for the NFL and for the NFL to end marijuana testing of the players so that if they're in a legal medical marijuana state like Seattle Seahawks, Denver Broncos, they could medical marijuana, shit. You know, all the California teams, Los Angeles Rams, Oakland Raiders, San Francisco 49ers, San Diego Chargers, all in California. Lots of state. I think I counted one time there was like 13 or 14 NFL teams that play where medical marijuana is legal. It's got to be more now. Ohio's medical now. So you got Cincinnati Bengals, Cleveland Browns. Anyway, Eugene Monroe has been a high-profile spokesman for ending the testing for marijuana in the NFL and for, you know, promoting medical marijuana research for concussion. And, you know, it's not like the NFL couldn't use some help dealing with concussions. They've got it. They've got some lawsuits still going for the chronic traumatic encephalopathy. They had the lawsuits over the concussions. They had to settle for what was it, $660 million, something like that. So, the release by the Ravens, of course, came as a surprise because the guy's, you know, his contract's not huge and he's a good player and no reason to really drop him, aside from his advocacy, his free speech. So the Ravens today said that dropping him, they're not saying one way or the other why they dropped him, but they just put a note on their website and said, that says, quote, Monroe had surgery to repair a torn labrum this offseason and used the time off to become the first active NFL player to openly campaign for the use of medical marijuana. The Ravens did not rally behind the cause. End quote. And there's also a quote from the head coach who says, I promise you he does not speak for the organization. So, yeah, just, you know, giving this guy the boot for his opinions, trying to help other players, because that closed culture of the NFL is so strong, and they just can't get their minds around this whole marijuana thing. And of course, they never mentioned a damn thing about Monroe's advocacy for medical marijuana before they cut him. This is the first they've ever mentioned it now. Is after they've cut him, they mention that he's the first player to be using this. So it's a shame, of course, because this is kind of a chilling effect on other players in the league. At a time when he's trying to build consciousness for this, and there's other ex-players too, people like Jake Plummer and Eben Britton and Kyle Turley, Ricky Williams, Marvin Washington, who are all ex-players who are motivated for this. But the NFL, we're going to have the same problem we have with cops. Sure, we get law enforcement against prohibition, and we get a whole raft of ex-cops that'll talk about this, but not any current ones, or very rarely any current ones. And that's what we're going to have with the NFL, with this release, he wasn't traded, he was released to free agency, of Eugene Monroe. Other players that agree with him that think, yeah, man, I mean, I smoke pot. I mean, they know. Look, the NFL, to even try to say with a straight face they're trying to actually stop people from using marijuana, no. They announce to the players that, hey, the drug testing starts on April 20th. Yes, literally, they start their drug testing on 420. At least it was this year. They tell them when the test will be. And then after they pass that test, there's no more testing for marijuana after that. Really, all the NFL's trying to do is to find out whether a guy can stop smoking pot long enough to pass a test. And this is the insidious way I think some people think about drug testing, especially workplace drug testing. Because it is beatable, right? Because marijuana is not so addicting. Because you can go without it for a long period of time. I think a lot of people, and even if you can't, you can easily cheat it. I think a lot of people don't see a drug test really as a drug test. They see it as an intelligence test. Or they see it as a drug addiction test. That might be a better way to put it. Like the attitude of employers and the NFL and others might be, yeah, we know people smoke pot, but if you can't stop smoking pot long enough to pass a drug test, then you've got a problem with pot. I really think that's the way a lot of people think of this. So it's just a matter of this wink, wink, nudge, nudge, look the other way. Yeah, we know everyone does it, and we know keeping it illegal doesn't really stop them, and we know drug testing doesn't really stop them either, but it's a nice little theater that makes us feel like we've done something. You know, kind of like the taking off your shoes at the airport and all that kind of garbage. Makes you feel like you've done something. So his salary, by the way, $6.5 million salary. He has had injuries, and they selected another offensive tackle with the sixth overall pick in the draft. So he might have been on his way out anyway. It's my belief, though, that the Ravens, before Monroe, you know, came out publicly, maybe it was known privately, and they started lining things up to make sure they could get rid of him. That's my belief. They offloaded this guy because he's pro medical marijuana, and that we'll see what it does to other players. I really wish the players. And not just on the medical marijuana issue. This is something I got thinking about with the death of the great Muhammad Ali over the past week. Is how politics and sports have divorced from one another. Now, there was a time when sports had a great deal of influence on the political, you know, battles of the day. I think of like Billie Jean King versus Bobby Riggs, the great battle of the sexes thing where if you're too young, you won't know. But Bobby Riggs was this male tennis player, not a great tennis player, but a good one, but not like a superstar champion tennis player, but a good enough tennis player who kind of opined that even, you know, shitty middle of the road male tennis players would be better than any even champion female tennis player. And so Billie Jean King, this female champion, said, I'll take you up on that shit, and whooped his ass. Right. It was a big moment for women's lib. It was a big moment for the this battle of the sexes. Right. And then, of course, Ali was nothing but political, refusing induction into the draft, losing his title, losing his passport, being banned from doing work. Like, that's his work. Fighting was his work. And took that, lost the 3 prime years of his life when he could have been racking up victory after victory and making millions of dollars because of a political belief, because he didn't believe in the Vietnam War, because he was a conscientious objector. Brought in politics and religion. I think in 1968, when you had the Black Panther salute at the Olympics, I think of so many ways in which our sports figures used to be more political. But now, as the sports leagues, NFL, of course, the most gargantuan of them, have become so corporate and so micromanaged and media coached that when someone like Richard Sherman from the Seattle Seahawks goes so far as to let people know that the word thug is actually a code word, and that freaks everyone out. Oh, my God, he's so brash and outspoken. We need more of that. I think we need more of that. When those St. Louis Rams players, back when they were in St. Louis, came out to the field with the Black Lives Matter kind of hands up, don't shoot. We need more of that. I know there's some people out there that's like, I like to watch sports because I want to get away from all these other things. And look, you will. You'll get away from all these other things. But I don't think sports are completely divorced from life. And if these sports leagues like the NFL come down on people like Eugene Monroe for expressing an opinion on medicine for their own players that's currently backed by 25 states, that's not hard. I mean, that's not even controversial. 80% of America agrees with medical marijuana at this point. And the NFL is going to ban that? Imagine some player wanting to say something really serious. It's frustrating to me. I'm a big football fan. I love my Sunday football and Monday and Thursday and the Saturday night games that occasionally happen. But I love my football. But I also know that, you know, we have to be sensible. And when we see harm that can be reduced, and again, because the debates I've been in lately, everything has gotten so slippery slope and binary absolutist. It's like, yes, it could go too far. Yeah, we could over-soften the NFL and have them playing nothing but powder puff flag football. That would go too far. Nobody's saying there shouldn't be violent collisions in the NFL. We're saying, because there are violent collisions in the NFL, let's find some ways to mitigate that. How about we let the players use something that's been shown to mitigate the effects of concussion? There's a first start. I got some other ideas. Like one of the concussions and injuries happen are on special teams plays. So that's part of it, you know, is special teams. And so, you know, eliminate kickoffs. You don't need kickoffs anymore. Start the teams off from the 20 and let it just start from that. Yeah, we'd lose out on the occasional exciting 100-yard kickoff return play. It'd suck to lose that, I guess. But really, these days, most kickoffs, they kick them all the way through the goalposts anyway, you know, on the kickoff. They're starting out on the 20 anyway. So just, anyway, I'm devolving too far into the football arguments. Want to keep it on the idea of allowing our sports figures to be able to speak out about medical marijuana. And given that I'm betting now the majority of teams in the pro sports leagues are in places that have medical marijuana. That's got to be true now. I'll look it up. I'll verify that for sure, but that's got to be true now, right? All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I've held off as long as I can, but I got more to say about guns. Sorry, I know. I know half of you hate me. That's okay. I just disagree with you on this. But I had an epiphany about gun safety from talking to some of y'all. And it kind of blew my mind. I just want to share it with you. See if it blows your mind as well. We're back in just 2 minutes. Thanks for sticking around.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Seed to sale, clicks to conversions, and more. You're listening to the Cannabis Radio Network.
Play as Ted Growing, expelled botany sophomore and the biggest grower in town, only on Weed Firm Replanted. Available on the App Store and Google Play.
It's a lot of work being the biggest grower in town. Maintaining a room full of plants while dealing with a slew of eccentric customers, from a hardcore partier to the curious neighbor next door.
Is anybody home?
Help me expand my bud business by unlocking new strains, customizing my grow room, and completing challenges that you can't get enough of. Grow your empire so big you can see it from space. Low on funds? Don't worry. Weed Firm Replanted is free to download.
Download Weed Firm Replanted for free on the App Store and Google Play today. Get growing, Mr. Growing.
I'm Radical Russ from the Russ Belville Show.
Good to everybody. Radical Russ here in Aspen, Colorado at the Alaska Northwest Cannabis Classic at the 26th annual Boston Freedom Rally at the High Times Cannabis Cup, Northern California. Day one of CannaCon in Seattle, Washington.
It's the Russ Belville Show, the NPR of POT, weekdays live at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific, exclusively on CannabisRadio.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Christian convictions are under attack as never before.
Okay, maybe you're high too.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com, and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Warning, hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that. This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back, everybody. 38 after the hour. And I'm going to delve into the gun thing again. So I put it at the end of the show. You can just turn off now if you don't like it. But I just can't help but expend a lot of thought about this. And one thing that bothers me is how the Congress has opposed even studying the issue. Did you know that? Like, there was a proposal that, hey, you know, there's this thing that's killing 32,000 people every year. Could we spend some federal money to look at that? Maybe just investigate that? Maybe kind of figure out why that is, or even just map out how much and how often, and, you know, just get some info. No, you can't even study it. And that tells you something. When one side of the debate doesn't even want to study the issue, it tells me that they know what the answers would be. The answers would be, hey, what we found comparing all these nations and all these states is that when there's more guns around, more people die from guns. It's an inescapable conclusion. You can find it in all the stats. It's just truth. It's just like climate change. It's like gravity. It's like evolution. It's just truth. Okay. So anyway, that's a problem. That's a big problem for me, is that we can't even study this. We can't even study it, right? But as I've been having these arguments, and I've been posting on Facebook a lot about this, and about half my fans hate me for it. That's fine. That's okay. It's what I do find interesting, though, is when they come at me, though, Russ, how can't you be civil, and why you have to make up these names and be so snarky and sarcastic? It's like, motherfuckers, you love it when I do that to Kevin Sabet. You love it when I do that to the drug czar. You love it when I'm doing it to the anti-marijuana people. Come on now. Don't expect me to, you know, change tactics now just because I'm talking about something you don't like. Anyway, so I've been having these discussions, right? I've been going off and doing thought experiments on Facebook. And I posted one thought experiment, and I'll admit right off the top, this is gruesome. It's gruesome, and I don't wish it to happen. It'd be terrible if I did. But it was a thought experiment. And the thought experiment was, what sort of mass shooting would it take for there to be a change? See, part of this is because part of me has kind of given up. Obviously, it doesn't sound like it, right? But part of me has given up on this. There's a part of me that's the George Carlin side of me that says, you know what? Fuck it. We're just the gun country. We are the gun country. We'll always be the gun country. And there's a non-zero chance that I could go to the mall and get shot. I just have to accept it because I live in America, just like people who live in Australia have to accept that a spider could bite them and kill them, or a snake could bite them and kill them, or a platypus could bite them and kill them. I don't know, but all sorts of shit can bite you and kill you in Australia. Just like people in Florida have to live with the fact that there's gators all around, and if you're not watching your dog or your kid, and he's near the water, could get dragged off by a gator. It's just a fact of life. We just live in the gun country. It's impossible to change it. Nothing will ever change. Random bullets are just a way you can die. So there's a part of me that thinks that way. And by thinking that way, it kind of frees me up to be radical and think of all sorts of other different points of view. And one of them I started to think of was, like I said, what would it take? Because when Sandy Hook happened, and 20 white first graders were slaughtered in their classroom, I thought that was it. I thought, oh my God, that's got to change people's minds. Because we're all about, what about the children? Oh, what about the children? And you can't reasonably expect Mrs. Grundy, the first grade teacher, to be packing heat all the time, right? Well, apparently you can. Apparently it did not change a thing. It did. In fact, things got worse. Things got worse after Sandy Hook as far as gun laws and gun accessibility go. 20 dead first graders. Well, that's just the price of the Second Amendment. Bunch of slave owning musket bearers wrote a couple of lines 230 years ago. And so, you know, the occasional slaughtered classroom of kids is just the price we have to pay for freedom. That's just, you know, so you and I can go out to the desert and, you know, shoot an AR-15 at some cans and shit and get our jollies. We wouldn't be, you know, if we can't do that, what is freedom? Right. So I thought Sandy Hook would change things, and it didn't. And so obviously the black church shooting's not going to change things, and the movie theater shooting's not going to change things, and shooting at gay people in a gay bar. Although I did see a meme that I think summed my thoughts on that up, which was you wanted to bring the attention of the most mobilized minority community, politically speaking, to the attention of our frayed gun laws. Have you seen what the LGBT community has done in the past 25 years as far as change goes? Right. But I was stuck. I couldn't think, what would it take gun wise? Massacre wise to change things. And then I thought, maybe it's not the numbers. Maybe it's who's getting shot. Maybe it's where they're getting shot. Cause they're getting shot in places like Aurora and, you know, in Charleston and Orlando and San Bernardino and places that are kind of urban. They're not getting shot up in Enid, Oklahoma. They're not getting shot up in Buell, Idaho, right? They're not getting shot up in these little burgs, right? And when they're shot up in the cities, I don't know that necessarily a lot of people identify with that, right? That, you know, these country folks, flyover folks, they think, well, you know, big city liberals, big cities, that's where the crime happens. There's all sorts of crime and gangs in the big cities, and big cities are debauched and godless, and that's not us. We don't live there. So I got to thinking, all right, what if it was a massacre at one of these mega churches? One of these big stadium-sized, packed full of white people mega churches. Would that change anything? What if it was a massacre at, a rodeo? At a rodeo. Yeah, a massacre at a rodeo. Would that change anything? And then I hit upon it. No. And again, let me reiterate, I'm not wishing these things to happen. I'm thought experimenting as to what would it possibly take? Because it's obviously going to happen again, folks. We're going to have more massacres. We're not going to change anything. So there's going to be more massacres. So what would it take? So I hit upon it and I thought, a gun show. If there was a massacre at one of these private gun shows in one of these convention centers, right? Say you get two guys like the Klebold and Harris, a team of two, right? And they get into a gun show with a couple AR-15s and a whole bunch of magazines, 30 round magazines, just chucked to the brim. And they start locking and loading back to back and spinning with two AR-15s each, pow, 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 each, right? With their backs to each other and just rotating in a circle, just mowing down everybody near them. Now, it is a gun show. So there would probably be someone with a gun that would probably take them out. But how many people did they mow down before that? And then how would that destroy the only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. How would it affect that argument? You just had a slaughter of 40 or 50 people at a gun show where everybody's got guns, right? So I started posting this and running through this thought experiment, and people started responding back to me about the gun shows. And they said, well, Russ, at the gun shows, you have to go through security. And they check your bags to make sure you not have, you know, bunches of ammo in magazines. And then if you have a gun, if you buy one there or you brought guns in, they have to have a zip tie that makes them unusable while that zip tie is connected. And then, of course, they've got, you know, armed security guards all around the place. And I just went, what? So you mean to tell me that you people with the guns, you good guys with the guns, when you have your gatherings that put a whole bunch of you good guys with guns together in places where there's lots of guns, somehow there you seem to understand that the combination of many people and many guns is a dangerous one and should be infringed upon a little bit. Infringe upon the right of these people with their guns walking around the gun show to be able to use them. You somehow see that as common sense. You somehow, as you're all gathered together, all you good guys with a gun, don't trust each other enough for there not to be gun control at the gun show. But we're supposed to expect out in the mall and the theater and the church that you good guys with guns are the ones that are going to be saving us and not endangering us. You don't even trust yourselves at the shows. This was the epiphany that blew my mind. It's like, wait a minute. You recognize that many people plus many guns in a confined space is not a good thing, that we should infringe upon their right with a zip tie to be able to load and use that weapon. It just blows me away. You can put up with that. Now, one of the responses I got back, which I thought was funny as hell, was, well, that's different. It's a private event. It's different when the private sector says whether or not there's gun control versus whether or not the government says there is. Okay. So some rich asshole who owns a convention center, if he decides that a whole bunch of people with easy access to guns is a dangerous thing and your Second Amendment rights should be infringed, you'll go right along with that. But if the people, through their government and elected officials, came together and decided that maybe you ought not to be able to have 30-round magazines, that would be too much to ask. Just, I find no logical consistency. The only logical consistency, and again, comedian Jim Jeffries nails it, is the only logical pro-gun argument is, fuck off, I like guns. That's it. You just like them. It's your hobby. You enjoy doing, this is your hobby. Guns are fun to you. It's a part of who you are. It's how you define yourself. It's how you get recognition and enjoy recreation is through guns. I see your magazines, your guns and ammo magazines, your sniper magazines, all these fetishizing magazines of how macho and cool and awesome guns are. You're no different than the guys I used to go to high school with who are like, man, I got a Chevy, it's a 4-barrel carburetor, and this Chevy kicked ass. Oh, no, fuck you, man. A Ford, man. A Ford kicked ass. You're the same types of guys. Oh, Ruger. Oh, Sig Sauer. Oh, AR-15. Blah, blah, blah. It's the same mentality. It's the same self-aggrandizing, ego-stroking bullshit. It's just the difference is if I'm, you know, cool about my X-Men number 179 comic and I make a big deal about that, or somebody else has a record collection of old vinyl from the 50s, or someone else likes to do needlepoint as their hobby, all of our hobbies, even if we go batshit crazy, won't harm anyone. All right, that's probably enough for today. Thanks to those of you who stuck around, and when we come back, we'll close up shop, get things ready for Stoner Jesus, coming to you live on Cannabis Radio here at the top of the hour every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And we disagree quite a bit on this gun issue, but we still love each other. Stay tuned. We're back after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Every strain, every sale, every medical study. Keep it right here on the Cannabis Radio Network.
Dr. Dabber, hurry. Its temperature is shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up.
I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dabber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth-tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct. Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dabber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat, more flavor.
NORML stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those posed by legal drugs. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com, where we don't change our mind on decriminalization during an election year.
Are you playing an acoustic guitar but want to be louder without an amp? Try a resonator guitar. The fingerboard extension has National Resophonic and other resonators, square necks and round necks. Stop by the fingerboard extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com. Go wild hog in the woods.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back here. We just have a couple minutes before Stoner Jesus takes over here on CannabisRadio.com. But to leave you with a marijuana story, there's a story here out of Philly.com that shows a New Jersey assemblyman is proposing a bill on Thursday, going to go in tomorrow, to let New Jersey voters decide whether or not marijuana should be legalized just in Atlantic City. Yeah, so Atlantic City, New Jersey, of course, used to be one of only two major urban areas in the United States where you could do casino gambling, right? Las Vegas and, you know, Atlantic City. Although you had the other areas in Nevada, obviously, but it was mostly Las Vegas and Atlantic City. Well, gambling now is no big deal. There's like Indian casinos all over the place. There's riverboat casinos all over the place. And Atlantic City has gone to hell as far as its economy goes. So the idea is pass this marijuana legalization just for Atlantic City to rescue Atlantic City. It would allow the use, sale, and commercial cultivation of marijuana just in Atlantic City. And he says it would turn it into a city like Seattle, Vancouver, Denver, or Portland. And they wouldn't be in like the downtown areas or around where the casinos are. It'd be in some other, you know, he says it's not going to be like, you know, pot shops on the boardwalk. You know, you're going to have to go to other zoned areas. But this would not be without precedent because 1976 is when Atlantic City was voted on a referendum through the people of New Jersey voted to legalize gambling just in Atlantic City. So if we legalized gambling in Atlantic City in 1976 to rescue it from economic ruin, why not legalize pot in 2016, 40 years later, to rescue it from economic ruin again? And, you know, this is the assemblyman, you know, points out that the people from Pennsylvania are no longer coming into our state for those casinos. People aren't coming from Delaware or New York either because there are plenty of casinos there. By passing recreational marijuana legalization, we can attract a whole new crop of tourists, whether you're from the Woodstock generation or in your 20s. Either way, you win. I don't know. Legalized weed in just one city. I could see the difference is that you can't take gambling out of Atlantic City. Like, you can't play. If you legalize blackjack in Atlantic City, you can't then go to Trenton and play blackjack. But you legalize weed in Atlantic City, you can take that weed out of Atlantic City. I mean, I'm not against that. I'm all for it. But I'm just saying that's what the opponents are going to say. It's not the same. All right. Well, that's all the time we got for today. Thanks for joining us. Live from beautiful legal potland, Oregon, Stoner Jesus is coming up next. Stay tuned for that. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it.